Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, First Wave, Samanya Bhakti, Chapter 1, Verse 12, Sarvopadi Viniramuktam, Tatparatvena Nirmalam, Rishikena Rishikesha Sevanam Bhaktiruchate. This verse is given by Rupa Goswami to further define what is Uttam Bhakti, and he continues up until, from this verse, from verse 11 until verse 16, four or five verses, Rupa Goswami is explaining the meaning of Uttam Bhakti, pure devotional service which is free from the coverings of karma and jnana, and perform with a favorable attitude in a regular way, day after day, with the activities of our body, mind, and words for the pleasure of Krishna. So this verse is the praman for his statement. This comes from Narada Pancharatra, which we mentioned yesterday. And the sarvopadi means free from, sarvopadi vinir muktam is, means anya bilashitam. And tat paratvena, tat means that, and paratvena means to favorable. So this means anukulya. Nirmala means to be pure. So the impurity is, impurities are the coverings of karma and jnana. Because we think that by performing karma or jnana, I will get something that bhakti won't give me. Or we have some fear or doubts that, well, there's so many teachings and instructions in the Vedas that I have to do my karma. You meet people in Grihastha Ashram, and you say, what are you doing? So I'm doing my karma. In the West, you meet the hippies and they say, I'm working out my karma. They have no varna and no ashram, but they say, I'm working out my karma. That's a phrase. But they're not actually working out their karma. Their karma is working them over. And this phrase, working over, is when a few thugs or a few dacoits gang up on you and start beating you to a pulp with their fists, then they say, we work that guy over. So there's three thugs that are working everyone over. One's called Tamagun. One thug means dacoit, gunda, hoodlum. Tamagun, Rajagun, Sattvagun, these are, so the people, they're not working out their karma, they're being worked over by their karma. They're being beaten by their karma, life after life. Only those that are actually situated in varna or ashram, as following the dictates of the Vedic injunctions, they can truly say they are working out their karma by engaging in actions or karma according to the dharma, the instructions of the Vedas. This is actually dharma. Dharma means to act in a prescribed way, not in a whimsical way. If you act in a prescribed way and the prescriptions are given in the Vedas, then you elevate yourself. You move up the varnas from Shudra, next lifetime Vaishya, next lifetime Kshatriya, next lifetime Brahman. You move up the ashrams, and eventually your consciousness also moves up notch by notch by notch. And then you become pure, and according to your inclination you can attain moksha in a variety of ways. And if your consciousness is really pure, you don't care anything or any type of moksha, you just want to serve the Lord. If the Lord wants you to serve in Godhead or the spiritual world, then you're not opposed. Yes, I'll come back to Godhead if the service is there. But just to go there and kick back or relax, lie on the beach and soak up the sun, that's not the ambition of the devotee. We don't mind going back to Godhead, but that's not our main thrust. Our main thrust is service. Do or die, let me serve. If you want me to serve here, I'll serve here. If you want to take me there and keep me by your side for service, then I'll go there. I don't mind. But many Vaishnavas, their primary focus is that. That's why it says these are four kinds of mukti. And these themselves, although they're a type of desire, it's a spiritual desire. To want to live on Krishna's planet is a good desire. Or Vishnu's planet is very good. Because most people want to live in Bombay. And if you suggest that you move anywhere out of Bombay, they say, oh, I'd rather die. I can't. Let's move to Delhi. Delhi, impossible. So they're very much attached to this piece of earth called India or Bombay. So that's not very good. That's ignorance. Saiva gokaraha. Prabhupada quotes that verse. Yasyatma buddhi kunape chidatuke. That because they're totally attached to their body made of the three modes, and they have various expressions of attachment. So there's a nice purport here explaining this verse. In another edition of the Nectar Devotion, in order to justify the correctness of his definition of Uttam Bhakti, Rupa Goswami, in other words, Rupa Goswami wants to prove how his words are authentic. What I'm saying is the absolute truth. It's the gospel truth. And the Vedas are the Vedic gospel. The Vedas are the gospel for people that follow Sanatana Dharma. So he's quoting from verse 12 through 16. He quotes various references to prove that his verse, number 11, is actually describing pure bhakti. When defining bhakti, Narada Pancharatra says that the Supreme Lord, who is the subject of bhakti, is the Lord of all senses. The word Rishika means senses, and Isha means Lord. The word Rishikesha means Lord, really means Lord Sri Krishna. In other words, in this verse it says, Rishika, Rishikena, Sevana, Bhakti Uchate. So how is this verse following, word for word, or concept for concept, the verse that Rupa Goswami is giving? So Rupa says, Krishna Anushilanam, our regular cultivation or our regular performance of activities must be done for Krishna. Anukalyena Krishna. So he's specifying the word Krishna. But in this verse from Narada Pancharatra, it says Rishikesha, Sevanam Bhakti Uchate. It says Rishikesh. So this means, Rishika means senses, the Lord of the senses. But the Acharyas say that this Rishika means Krishna, because only Krishna can claim to be the Lord of the senses. And someone might say, well, what about Vishnu? He's also the Lord of the senses. He's also the Supreme. But Lord of the senses means the eyes, the mind, this is the sixth sense, the nose, all the senses. So the proof that Krishna, and not Vishnu or Narayan or any other form, is actually the Lord of the senses, or the Supreme Controller of the senses, is that his senses attract the senses of Lord Vishnu. You can read in Krishna book that when Krishna was living in Dwarka, Mahavishnu wanted to have darshan of Krishna. So he kidnapped the sons of the Brahmin, one by one. And then the Brahmin was saying, what is this? He complained to Ugrasen, who is the king of Dwarka, and Krishna was only living there, but the actual political king was the Ugrasen. And it's just like in England, they have the Queen of England. She's the queen, but she has no power. The power is with the Prime Minister of England. If he wants to bomb France or declare war, he doesn't have to ask Queen Elizabeth. He just calls his army in and starts bombing France. So in the same way, in Dwarka, Ugrasen was the king put on the throne by Krishna after he killed Kamsa. In Mathura, he installed Ugrasen as the king of Mathura because Ugrasen is the father of Kamsa. As Indians say, Kans. When you say Kamsa, they don't know what you're talking about. If you're preaching to Indians, you say, yes, Krishna killed Kamsa. You say, what? That means, maybe that means bell metal or something, Kamsa. They don't know what you're speaking about. You have to say Kans. K-A-N, like nasal N-S, Kans. This is interesting preaching in India. They're looking at Kamsa. What is that? Who is that? Say Kamsa. And they say, what? They had to change your pronunciation. First of all, these are all new words to us, and we hear them pronounced one way by Prabhupada with his Bengali accent. Because Bengali is different. Bengali is very much like Sanskrit. In Bengali, Kamsa is Kamsa. In Bengali is Kamsa, and Sanskrit is Kamsa. But Hindi becomes Kans. Hindi is a long way from Sanskrit. Long way. So we are trained in ISKCON to pronounce things according to Sanskrit and Bengali, and we're quite correct. And then, but when you live in North India, people say, oh no, what, you don't know anything, and all this stuff. Mm-hmm. You listen to all Prabhupada's tapes, he never says Kans. He must, if you ever heard his Kamsa, everywhere. So Prabhupada's wrong, he doesn't know Hindi. He doesn't. So, but people in Hindi, when you're in Hindi land, they say, oh Maharaj, you're stupid, you don't know, it's Kans. But actually the real fact is they're stupid. The actual Sanskrit word is Kamsa. You see what I'm saying? So we have to take the humble pie, oh yes, yes, yes. But there's 1,000 tapes in my guru lecture, and every tape he says Kamsa. And so I'm simply following Prabhupada, and he's following Bhaktisiddhanta. But when I come to North India, I have to follow, you know, Onion Head Agarwal or something. Garlic Nose Agarwal, because he pronounces Kamsa, Kans. Right? And then they try to make you feel bad when you're actually perfect and correct. But then you, so that's good for humility, you know. Well, it's just not Kant. So why you say Kant? It's Kant. That's just me. Because in the West, no one knows anything. No one knows Hindi, Sanskrit, or Bengali. So they say, okay, Kant. They come to North India, then people think they're kind of, what they say, uppity. They think they know something. Yes, okay. So this word, so here, they say, Anukulina Krishnanu Shilanam. So this is for Krishna. And so Jiva is saying, even in this verse, Rishika also refers to Krishna. So point by point, this verse from Narada Pancharatra is also paralleling Rupa Goswami's verse. To serve the Supreme Lord in all his senses by the complete application. Of all the spiritual organs of the pure soul is called bhakti. But this bhakti must be free from all possible extraneous desires and must be subservient to the delight of the Lord and must not be clouded by gyan, karma, or yoga. So that's Narada Pancharatra. Now Rupa Goswami goes on to give a few more verses to further elucidate and confirm the definition of uttam bhakti. And this is from Srimad Bhagavatam. Third canto, chapter 29, verse 12. This is Kapila Shiksha, Kapila Muni teaching his mother. Lakshanam bhakti yogasya nirgunasya yudharitam ahaituk yava yavita yabhakti purushottame. When Lord Kapiladev, the founder of the Sankhya system, the son of Devahuti and Kardama Muni, when he explained the 24 creative principles of Sankhya philosophy, Sri Devahuti prayed to Lord Kapila to please tell her about the conception of unalloyed bhakti, by which alone those 24 principles could be truly understood. In reply to his question, or to the query of his mother about the true nature of bhakti, Lord Kapiladev said, this is the background to this verse, Lakshanam Bhakti Yoga, so the characteristic of Bhakti Yoga, Nirgunasya Yudharitam. It says that unalloyed devotion, which means it's free from the modes of nature, or unalloyed Bhakti Yoga, in the Supreme Lord is that it is uncaused and incapable of being frustrated by anything. So that's what the word, it says ahoitaki. There's no cause. Bhakti is causeless. It just happens. It happens by the mercy of Krishna himself or his devotee. I think I'd like to look in Prabhupada's book and just see, because this translation can probably be more clearly understood from the Bhagavad, from here. Three,
Oh, it's the second half of the double verse.
Prabhupada says the manifestation of unadulterated devotional service is seen when one's mind is at once attracted to hearing the transcendental name and qualities of Krishna, who resides in everyone's heart. Just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. So here, Prabhupada is explaining the words. He says the word ahoituki. This word ahoituki is also in the Shikshastakam. Nadana najanana sundarim kavitam va jagadish kamaye mama janmane janmanishavi bhavatad bhaktir ahoituki twayi. So this word is very much talked about. It's translated as unalloyed. Unalloyed means no mixture. It's not an alloy, like aluminum is some alloy. It's not a mixture of other things. So ahoituki also means without reason. A pure devotee does not render loving service to Krishna for any cause or any benefit, material or spiritual. This is the first symptom of pure devotion. Anyabhilashita shunyam. So here even Prabhupada, as this verse is given as an elaboration of verse 11 of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, even Prabhupada is connecting this verse of Bhagavatam of Kapila to that definition of Rupa Goswami. He has no desire to fulfill by rendering devotional service. Such devotional service is meant for the Purushottam, Supreme Person, and not anyone else. Sometimes pseudo-devotees show devotion to many demigods, thinking the forms of demigods to be the same as Krishna's form. It is specifically mentioned herein that bhakti is only meant for Narayan, Vishnu, or Krishna, not anyone else. This is bhakti purushottame. So purushottam, or purusha uttam, means that supreme person, or supreme living entity, and that purushottam is none other than Krishna, or God. And some people say, oh, I'm a Shiv bhakta. Have you ever heard that? Shiv bhakta. Shiv bhakta, this bhakta, that bhakta. Well, there's no support for that. They may be Shiva worshipper, but bhakti, as we mentioned the other day, that throughout the scriptures, bhakti always refers to Purushottam or to Krishna, and not to anyone else. Another word in this verse Rupa's describing is avyavahita, which means without cessation. So this is the idea of anushilanam. A pure devotee must engage in the service of the Lord 24 hours a day without cessation. His life is so molded that every moment and every second he engages in some sort of devotional service to Krishna. The interests of the devotee and the interests of the Supreme Lord are one and the same. The devotee has no interest but to fulfill the desire of the Lord. So this is the oneness of the devotee. Such spontaneous service to Krishna is transcendental and never contaminated by the modes of material nature. So this Rupa is using this verse of Kapila Shiksha to support his definition of pure bhakti. So I'll read the next verse also. This is from third canto. It's a succession of verses actually. From verse 12 to 16, Rupa Goswami is simply giving support or making authentic his presentation of pure bhakti by citing Kapila Muni's teachings, verse 12, 13, and 14. Selokya sharsta samipya sarupyai kat tamapyuta divyamanam nagrinanti vina matsevanam jana. Kapila Muni further tells his mother, Devahuti, my genuine devotees, besides serving me alone for my delight, do not accept Saloki Mukti, liberation in the sense of living together with me in my own realm. Sharshti Mukti, liberation as possessing majesties and powers equal to mine. It's called Sharshti. Sharshti Mukti, sometimes they say having equal opulence of the Lord. It means you have opulence, but it also means you have powers. Because the Lord has all mystic powers. So if one has Sharsti Mukti, he can also fly in the sky, fly wherever he wants. On the weekends, if he wants to fly to the mountains. And Vaikuntha, he can fly up there without any taxi or anything. Because he has Anima City, Lagima City. He can, if he wants to walk, go across the river to the other side, he walks across the river. So he has all these all mystic powers. So that may be what he wants. He wants to live on the same planet as the Lord and have these type of opulences. So he gets Sharsti Mukti. Then Samipya Mukti means to be close proximity to the Lord, and Sarupya means possess a beauty equal to my beauty, and then Sayuja, which means to liberation as identity with me, or merging with the Lord. Even if I offer all these allurements or types of liberation to a devotee, they will never accept them. What to speak of ask me for them? The contention is that a pure devotee never asks for any such salvation or anything else whatsoever. He finds delight in serving me alone for my delight. So in terms of going back to Godhead, we don't mind going back to Godhead as long as we can serve Krishna there. And it's not, but that's not our primary aim. Let me just go back to Godhead. Because many Vaishnavas are like that. They have to do bhakti to go to Vaikuntha. But their primary reason for doing bhakti is to live in Vaikuntha. And when they get there, then they just relax. They don't actually engage. They're not directly serving the Lord. Their aim and ambition is actually to live on the Lord's planet. That's why it's rejected by a true bhakta. A true servant of the Lord, he wants nothing but service. And he spits actually the idea of just live on the planet? What good is that? What's the rasa in that? To live there. Even though they're living there on the same planet, they're doing devotion. What does it mean they're doing devotion? Oh, they're doing hearing and chanting. They're watching ITV movies on their TV or something like that. I mean, they're watching television, but it's only spiritual shows. Like Asta and Star TV or whatever, you know, whatever they are. They don't watch any Maya or Blue movies or anything. So that's they're doing some service. They offer their food, and maybe once in the year they may see Vishnu going on procession. So imagine living on the planet. Just like once in a year or two you may see the Prime Minister go down Delhi Agra Highway or something. Oh, there he is. Oh. Om Namo Narayan. And he goes by. So if a devotee thinks, how can I cannot live a minute. If my eyes blink and I don't see the Lord, I might as well die. And gopis are saying like that. They curse Brahma because they say, why didn't you make us like fish? Because fish don't have eyelids. We never have to blink our eye. We can see Krishna without cessation. So this is devotion. This is devotion. This is love. If someone loves someone, they don't want to just be in the same neighborhood with their lover. They want to be in the same room or the same chair or love seat or whatever. Oh yes, where's your wife? Oh, she's here somewhere in town. she lives somewhere. Oh, you're living in New York. Are you married? Yes, I'm married. Where's your wife? She's around somewhere, Manhattan, Brooklyn, somewhere. She's in New York for sure. I'll show you. Oh, you have a very close relationship with you. You have a very intimate relationship with your wife. Yeah, I see her once in a while on her, you know, driving by the street, and I wave, she waves. So this is Salokya Mukti. So, in quoting the shloka from Bhagavatam, which describes the character of a pure devotee, Rupa Goswami wants to establish the spontaneity and irresistibility of Uttam Bhakti, which are the signs of an unalloyed devotee as well. This reference from Bhagavatam does not directly support the correctness of his definition of the highest bhakti. Yet Sri Rupa Goswami shows that the character of a pure devotee is also the characteristic of pure bhakti. The reference is not therefore out of place here. Because in Nectar Devotion, or what we say Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Rupa Goswami is defining bhakti. What is bhakti? And this verse in Bhagavatam is describing the bhakta. Because Devahuti is asking Kapila, what is the bhakta? And Kapila says, the bhakta, he's a person, he doesn't want to live on the same planet as the Lord. He doesn't want the same opulence or the same form. He just wants to serve. So this is that characteristic of the bhakta. So the commentator is saying, and what revealing Rupa's intention, Rupa's including this in five verses where he also is defining pure bhakti, because if you define the bhakta, then you're also defining bhakti, because the bhakta, what does he do? He thinks and acts like in devotion. And so the lakshan, or the characteristics of a bhakta, also are the embodiment of the definition of bhakti. So this shloka, which describes the five types of liberation, silokya, sarshti, samipya, sarupya, and ekatva, or sayuja, has been purposely quoted here in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to establish the super excellence of uttam bhakti over mukti, or salvation. Though in defining bhakti, mukti has nothing directly to do with it. So this, in one sense, the total rejection of all forms of mukti by an unalloyed devotee is an inherent characteristic of uttam bhakti itself. This comes under the anya vilashita definition, that the devotee doesn't want anything. The Krishna bhakta, the devotee of Rajendra Nandan Krishna, who is being addressed here in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, because Rupa Goswami was told by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to broadcast Braja Bhakti. So Braja Bhakti is this type of uttam bhakti, nothing else. The mothers and fathers and friends and servants and lovers, they're all in this mode of uttam bhakti. But there's a whole class of Vaishnavas, the Sri Vaishnavas, worshippers of Lakshmi Narayan, worshippers of Sitaram. They have some ambition. They're after mukti, one of these four types of mukti. These are four, I mean five are listed here, but there are four types of Vaishnav mukti. These are bona fide aspirations that you can take birth in India in the Varnashram system, and you can follow all your Varna Dharma and Ashram Dharma with your eyes on one of these forms of liberation. And that's very nice. So that, and you have, and to attain any of these liberations, you have to do bhakti. So you may be attracted more to that liberation. That's why there's four types. Some people, they just want the divine opulence of the Lord. Oh, look at the temple of Sri Ranganath, how opulent he's dressed, and how his opulent festivals are. Udupi Krishna, who is like, in one sense, is like Vaikuntha form. Because they have this mood of going to Vaikuntha. So he's so much opulent. He has a golden viman, and he has a silver viman. This opulence is really nice, you know. And royalty and majesty and opulence. I like this, you know. And I want to have the same kind of opulence, but not in this world, in that world. So, of course, if you want sharsti, you have to get it, you have to go to Vaikuntha. So how can I myself surround myself with all this opulence like the Lord? Oh, you have to do devotion. Shravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Vishnu, and then they do that, and they're very dedicated, and they're very concerned. But they have their sankalp is, I want this. So they don't want opulence of this world, that's Maya. They want opulence of the spiritual world. So that's permitted, but it falls short of our definition of Braj Bhakti. They will not get into Vrindavan, because who has more opulence than the goddess of fortune? She wears 20 kilos of gold on her body every day. 20 kilos of gold. That's a few paisa. What to speak of the diamond necklaces and emeralds and rubies and everything. And so she got close, but she ran into the retaining wall underneath the veil tree. She couldn't give up that sense of majesty, the sense of queenness, that Lakshmita. Lakshmita. that tendency or that sabhav that I am goddess of fortune. Even if she was made a gopi and she was given a gopi sarup, she would still be thinking, yes, I'm a gopi and they're all gopis, but I'm a Lakshmi gopi. She would still think I'm special. But when they get on that realm, then there's an equality amongst the gopis. They all feel in a similar mood. And Radharani doesn't feel herself to be any... She knows that she renders service much better than anyone else and pleases Krishna more than anyone else. And in times of separation, sometimes she states that, but in her action, she's thinking, oh, I'm another gopi, and Krishna, you're with me, and why don't you go satisfy the other gopis? They're also anxious to be with you. So she does, in that way, she's feeling equality or oneness with all of them. And that's when she's in union with Krishna. But in separation, then sometimes Yoga Maya allows her to express her unique position, because her position is certainly unique. So look at this verse in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada says in the translation, the same verse, Salokya Sarshti Samipya, third canto, chapter 29, verse number 13. A pure devotee does not accept any kind of liberation, even though they are offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, listen, why don't you take liberation, live on my same planet? And then the devotees say, well, will I be able to serve you every day and render personal service to you? He said, yes, okay, I'll accept it. We'll accept it. We don't mind going back to Godhead as long as we can serve the Lord moment to moment. Because that is our intrinsic nature, is that we're servants. We don't want anything. And a servant who is a loving servant, because we're servants, but not only servants, but as we mentioned about the mantras, they're maid servants, but they're loving maid servants. Because they're serving with love, devotion. So devotion means everything for the master, or everything for the beloved. So the Lord says, let's take this or take that. No, I don't want. I only want your service. This, now, we were preaching over some ideas, and sometimes these ideas not going back to Godhead, and Janmani Janmani Ishvare Bhavatad Bhakti Rahaituki. This is in our Bhajan Rahasyam class. And then if we read these statements from Srila Prabhupada and his purport on these verses, which Rupa Goswami cites as the further elucidation of the definition of pure bhakti, then we hear again very loud and clear what the teachings of the Gaudiya Sampradaya are. And sometimes they go against what our own feelings are, our own conceptions. So our false conceptions have to retire, as we say, or they say, we have to die to live. If we want to live in a new conception. Lord Chaitanya teaches us how to execute pure devotional service out of spontaneous love for Krishna. In Shikshastakam, Mahaprabhu prays, O Lord, I do not wish to gain from you any wealth, nor do I wish to have a beautiful wife, nor do I wish to have any followers. All I want from you is that in life after life I may remain a pure devotee at your lotus feet. Certainly the person who's writing this purport, Nitya Lila Pravishnam Sri Srimade Sri Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, he's living that conception, and he fully embraces that conception. This is right from his heart and from his example of his own life. Any true follower of Srila Prabhupada, he or she must also come to that stage of realization. All I want from you, Krishna, is that in life after life I may remain a pure devotee at your lotus feet. There is a similarity between the prayers of Mahaprabhu and Kapila's Shiksha, here quoted in Bhagavatam. Lord Chaitanya says, Janmani Janmani, in life after life, indicating that a devotee does not even desire the cessation of birth and death. The yogis and empiric philosophers desire cessation of the process of birth and death, but a devotee is satisfied to remain even in this material world and execute devotional service. The devotee is so fond of rendering service to Krishna that the five kinds of liberation are not important to him. If one is engaged in pure transcendental loving service to the Lord, it is already understood that he's achieved the five kinds of liberation. Because if you're serving that Lord, if you're serving the Lord, that means you have samipya, you have the association. If you're serving the Lord, that means you have silokya, you're with him, he's with you, wherever you are. It's Vaikuntha, it's Vrindavan. You're in New York, but you're in Brajadam, because you're serving, the Lord's there. So you have silokya, you have samipya, and you have sarupya. Sarupya means you have a form, because you serve the Lord in your form. We have form. We serve him in sadhaka roop, and then if Guru gives us siddha roop, then we're sitting in meditation, we're serving the Lord in siddha roop. So we have sarupya mukti. So that now we have samipya, and we have silokya, and we have sarupya. And then the fourth one is Sharsti. Sharsti means opulence. So we have the same opulence of the Lord. The Lord eats chapan bhog, which is very opulently cooked food, and we eat his remnants. So we're sharing in the opulence of the Lord. We offer the Lord a new necklace, a gold necklace. Someone gets inspired and says, listen, here's a gold necklace for your Thakurji. So we offer him a new one, and we take off the old one, put it on our neck, and wear a prasad, prasadi mala. So we have the same opulence, whatever he has. And the real opulence is the feelings he's having, or the feelings that she's having, the feelings that Radha and Krishna are having. That's the real opulence. Because the real wealth of a person is the amount of love they have, not the amount of money they have. Because what's valuable is love, not money. What's pleasurable is love, not money. What satisfies is love, not money. So when one is serving the Lord from moment to moment, day to day, then he's also a Sharsti. He has all the opulences of the Lord. Because the greatest opulence of the Lord is Radharani. And she's the embodiment of love. So if someone is serving Radharani, then they have the access to the national treasury. They have access to the heart treasury of Krishna. Because Krishna's heart treasure is Radharani. So whatever opulence of love she feels is also registered in the hearts of the Manjaris. So someone is in Manjari Bhav, they're already existing in five, there's no, what do you mean the very, I've got it all. If you go to some rich man, you say, listen, I'm gonna do something for you. I'm going to make you rich. The guy said, what are you talking about? Do you know who I am? I have 50,000 crores in the bank. Oh, I didn't realize. So what can you give him? You know, so what can you, for someone who's a follower of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's like, oh, they meet some Vaishnava from Sri Sampradaya. And he said, what is your aspiration? Why are you doing bhakti? Oh, I want to go to Vaikuntha. I have a t-shirt that says, I want to, you know, back home, back to Vaikuntha. I want to live there. Acha? Well, how trifling. How insignificant. That's all you want? Only just that thing? Yes. If I can just live in Vaikuntha, that'll be the perfection of my life. I mean, that's all I want. That's everything. Oh, I have all that already. So the next verse he cites is also from third canto, Kapila Shiksha. It's a continuation. There are three verses, chapter 29, verse 12, 13, and 14. Seva bhakti yoga kya atyantika udharita inati bhrajyat trigunam madbhavyo papapadyate. This is said to be the supreme conception of bhakti, by which one can cut asunder the bondage of the threefold gunas and be eligible to attain my prema. My prema means Bhagavan prema, because Bhagavan Kapila is speaking to Devahuti. Bhakti yoga kya aityantika udarita. Let's see what they says here. By attaining the highest platform of devotional service, as I have explained, says Kapila, one can overcome the influence of the three modes of material nature. Inati braja trigunam. And be situated in the transcendental stage, as is the Lord. By citing this verse in continuation of the previous one, Sri Rupa Goswami wants to say that Uttam Bhakti far transcends the aspirations for the various forms of mukti and even moksha. Seems like the same thing. Kind of interesting English. So why does a devotee take recourse to bhakti? Bhakti is itself the supreme end of bhakti. This always captures everyone's mind. Bhakti is itself the supreme end of bhakti. The word in this verse, Atyantika, means the end, like Antyalila. Does it then mean that ekatva, or sayujamukti, the identification or merging of the finite self with the infinite Godhead, which is, quote, the end, is the end of bhakti? No, it means that bhakti is much more than sayujya. In certain places in the scriptures, the word apavarga, or Brahma Nirvan Sukha, has been used in the sense of bhakti only. For example, in the fifth canto, there's chapter 19, verse 19 and 20, Shukadev tells Parikshit, sometimes this English is a little hard to digest. I think I'm going to look that up here. See the reference he's using. Fifth canto. Well, unfortunately, here it is. It's all about Varnashram Dharma. Okay, we'll read it. The people who take birth, this is the fifth canto, chapter 19, verse 19 and 20. People who take birth in the tract of land known as India are divided according to the qualities of material nature. Some are born as exalted personalities and some as ordinary human beings. Some are also extremely abominable. For in India, one takes birth according to one's past karma. If one's position is ascertained by a bona fide spiritual master, and one is properly trained to engage in the service of the Lord, Vishnu, according to the Varna and Ashram system, one's life becomes perfect. Next verse. After many, many births, when the results of one's pious activities mature, one gets an opportunity to associate with a pure devotee. Then one is able to cut the bondage to ignorance. As a result of association, one gradually renders service to Vasudev, who is transcendental, free from attachment to the material world, beyond the mind and words, and independent of everything else. That bhakti yoga to the Lord is the real path of liberation. So he's just saying that all these other liberations, he's citing this verse to show that these other liberations are not really significant, that bhakti surpasses them, and this is the real path of liberation. And he quotes a verse from seventh canto, which Bhanuswami has translated. You can read that. Says Salokyerari Padyasta Bhaktotkarsha Nirupanam Bhakter Vishudata Vyaktya Lakshane Paryavasyati. The description of the excellence of the devotee amounts in the above verse, which is from the third canto, amounts to the describing the characteristics of bhakti by revealing its purity. So the This was what we said before, that in describing how different forms of liberation doesn't describe the definition of bhakti, but what the devotee is not interested in. So Rupa Goswami is in these verses, this is a conclusion of his definition of bhakti. He said, Vedic literature and Varnashram system, they offer these different types of bhakti, different types of liberation, but a devotee is not interested in them, even if the Lord offers liberation to the devotee. So here, take liberation, or take all these opulences. He says, no, I don't want that, I only want you. Because what's important is the person and not all the other things. And when we have Krishna, the person, then we have his service. So we can stop there if there's any questions, or we can start the next section. The whole idea is that Rupa Goswami wants to convince us that bhakti for bhakti's sake, and he quotes all these references from Bhagavatam, where Kapila Muni specifically, he has three verses from Kapila Muni, is encouraging one to not be distracted or allured by some other form of liberation, Vaikuntha liberation, and understand that bhakti itself is the highest aspiration attainable for the human being. Because we become allured by it also. There's some comment, question? Yes.
The residents of Vaikuntha, they are possessors of one of those five types of liberation. Do they still hold their feelings bhakti? Like
yes, yeah, they have. They can't go there unless they're bhaktas.
Like mixed bhakti?
Yeah, there's some covering there. That's avritam. That's why Rupa Goswami uses the word avritam. He says, jnana karmadi avritam, anavritam. We must be free from the avritam, the covering. So even the residents of Vaikuntha, their bhakti is covered.
Are they in the shanta or dasyaras?
Mostly it's described, even when they describe the position of Lakshmi Devi, the whole, even though it's Madhurya, because she's the wife of Lord Vishnu, the basic exchange is Shanta and Dasya. Because although she's the supreme personality of Vaikuntha, she has the most, samipya, liberation. You can say she has the most intimate relationship with the Lord. Her actual service is nothing but a masseuse. Masseuse means she's just simply massaging his feet. So the queen of Vaikuntha is simply reduced to a barber. A barber in Vedic society is considered to be a shudra, because it's very dirty work. And barbers cut hair and they also give massage. They rub your back and they rub your feet. So Lakshmi Devi is the goddess of, we say the goddess of fortune, and everyone does Lakshmi puja, especially in a few days. And they want the favor of Lakshmi. But she's simply a dasi. She's like a dasi. She's in dasi bhav. So in Bhakti Sandarbha, it says that even Vaikuntha, mostly the relationships, what's going on there is shantaras and dasiras. There's no question of friendship with Lord Vishnu. You can't get next to him.
But he doesn't have friends over
there? Yeah, there's some friends, of course, but it's like social friends. It's not like it's not like Vrindavan. The rasas are there. Because the rasas go all the way up to Madhurya. Because Lakshmi is his wife, but it's so constrained and so constricted because they're royalty. They have to move in a certain way, and she has to sit in a certain way, and he has to sit in a certain way, and they can't look. They have to preside over the assembly. It's very, very stiff, and she's just rubbing his feet. They say that this is a very stiff place, very stiff relationship. Really, that's what they say. Although these rasas are there, the basic mood of everyone is great awe and reverence and great respect. And basically, they say shantaras and dasiras. The real, what to speak of vatsali? Is there any vatsali ras there? And Vaikuntha, I'm asking you a question. Vatsali means parental, the mother and father. Let me put it another way. Who is the mother and father of Vishnu? There ain't none. To put it in very proper British English. There ain't none. There isn't any father. There is no Vatsali Ras. And who are the friends? Daruka is his friend? Because sometimes the chauffeur becomes the friend of the master. But his staiba is dasya. So as far as individuals having staiba of sakya, there's practically no one. And then the staiba of Lakshmi Devi is madhurya, but the way she expresses that staiba of madhurya of conjugal love as swakya or wedded wife is basically only shanta. There's no dancing. There's no holy. There's no fun. So the acharyas are quite blankly or straightforwardly saying that in Vaikuntha there's only, even they say there's 2.5 rasas. They say there's shanta and dasya and a half portion of madhurya. But in Brajadam there's all rasas. And they say that in Brajadam sometimes they say there's only one ras, madhurya. And everything is saturated with a sweetness. The ground, which technically the ground is shut, it's passively serving the Lord, the ground. But the ground is shivering in ecstasy when it touches the feet of Krishna. So even the ground is experiencing madhurya in Braja. The ground, the land, the trees, the birds are crying in ecstasy, and the trees are dripping honey and sattvic bhavs. So in Braja, all 5 rasas are there. The primary rasas are the 3, Vatsalya, Madhurya, and Sakya. But everywhere there's sweetness. There's madhurya dham. So this Vaikuntha is a very dry place. So people want to go, Vaishnavas who want to go there are very dry. there's no. Lakshmi says, okay, squeeze my toes. Can you crack my toe for me? Oh, clunk, clunk. Oh, that's good. Good job. There's 2.5 rasas, right? And even then, there's the dust is dust, shanta dasya and a touch of madhurya, but that madhurya is 99% dasya, just dasi. Yes.
It's different from Dwarka, is it?
Dwarka is obviously way different. Dwarka is what does they even have? They break down. It says 4. All the rasas are there. But the madhurya of Dwarka is mixed with Aishwarya. But there's no Vaikuntha, there's no madhurya. It's only Aishwarya. It's called Shuddha Aishwarya. Pure Aishwarya. And Dwarka, you read the Krishna, you read it. Don't you read the Krishna book? Krishna's shooting the queens with water, and then they're feeling some separation. They're right in front of them, but their hearts get covered with this mood of separation. It's almost parodies or mimics the gopis in the rasa dance. Oh, Osprey, have you seen our Lord Dwarkadish? You must have seen him. You're crying at night like us. Are you feeling separation from the Lord? Oh, mountains, oh, Raivata mountains, because there's mountains in Dwarka. Oh, you're standing up so tall. Are you feeling like us? Are you feeling that you want to hold Krishna's feet on your raised mountain peaks like we're missing Krishna and want to hold his Our Dwarkadish hold his feet on our raised breasts. So they're seeing that different things around Dwarka, whether it's standing in some swimming pool or whatever, squirting water. It just never, ever goes on in Vaikuntha. Nothing. You just sit in the assembly hall, she rubs your feet, you go home, the servants eat dinner, you go to the royal quarters and take rest, and she goes to the royal quarters and takes rest, and that's it. Haribo. Nothing. There's no TV, no movies, No, holy or jewelin or nothing, dancing, nothing. You just practically you're always Krishna. Vishnu goes to sleep. You know he still has his crown on and his chakra. You know. he's ready for action. And how can you sleep with somebody like that? I mean, of course, kings and queens they don't sleep anyway. They even in this world, kings and queens they only sleep together when they want to have children. But there's no children. If you've never been to these palaces in Rajasthan, here's the king's quarters. Or even they have the queen's palace. You go to city palace in Jaipur, here's the queen's palace. Here's the king's palace. It's not like now a double bed or something. Us and a wife are like 2 logs lying in a bed. The queen's palace is 1/4 mile away from the king's palace. So they sleep. I sleep 1/4 mile away from, you know, 1/2 kilometer away from my wife. The same in Vaikuntha. Vishnu meets Lakshmi when he goes to the Sudharma assembly house because his feet get tired after he walks there and needs somebody to rub them. And Lakshmi comes, "Oh, your feet must be tired. Let me rub them. I think your gold shoes are not fitting you properly. Your toes are getting some blisters." Now, Krishna doesn't have to worry about that because he goes barefoot. Foot loose and fancy free. There's a phrase like that. So Krishna is definitely, that's a nice description of Krishna Vrindavan. Foot loose and fancy free. That's another way of saying, dear Lalita. If you want to put it in American slang. Some other question? Yes. Everybody's so interested about Vaikuntha. I didn't mean to pinch anybody's sore spots.
But you mentioned there that Dhyan Bhakti has a covering. So what is the difference in the level of prem or the type of prem in Vaikuntha and Gopal
Vrindavan? Oh, it's, what do they call it? It's called, it's in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it's described as called Sankula Rati. I think it's called Sankula Rati. It means shrunken. Like, you ever see these in Africa? They used to catch these guys and put them in some kind of soup. These Christian preachers, you know, or maybe Hare Krishnas or whatever, they put them in some kind of hot soup and shrink their heads. It's called shrunken heads, and they hang around their neck like Lord Shiva. And all the witch doctors in the village of Africa, they wear these shrunken heads. So it describes it. I think it's Sankula Rati. It says it's shrunken. It's very, like, it's uptight. Prema is there, but that's a term that's used in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Vaikuntha Prema is described that way. It's not described as Shuddha Prema or Vishuddha Prema. Braj Prema is called Vishuddha Prema. So obviously you have to be a pure devotee to go to Vaikuntha. You don't go there if you're still interested in disco and jazz. You have to be interested only in Vishnu and serving him. You have to be a pure devotee to go there. But your pure devotion is full of static. It's not clear reception. And that static is there's some slight covering, avritam, of, you can't say, it's not impurity because you want, it's purity to want to live on the same planet as Vishnu. But in our definition as given by our acharyas, this is a type of, it's not saying impurity, it's saying a covering. Like, I may be fully in full health, but somebody throws a sheet over me. I say, "Where's the Maharaj?" "Well, he's under the sheet." "Is he really there? Is he fully there? Is he healthy? Is he okay?" "Yeah, everything's there, but he's under that sheet." So their love is pure in Vaikuntha, but it's not, you know, it's Purna, Purnatara, Purnatam.
They cook there, they have food, vegetables, meat.
Yeah, they have some good
food.
Yeah, Surabhi Palyantam. They have everything is there. Kapil Vriksha is there, Chintamani Bhumi is there, everything is there. But the difference between Vaikuntha and Braj Chintamani, in Vaikuntha, when the Chintamani is there or the Kapil Vriksha is there, there's some Kapil Vriksha trees, they might look at their shirt and they say, "Oh, it's getting a little old here." And they go to the Kapil Vriksha tree and they say, "Listen, I need a new shirt." And then he drops off size 5 and he put it on, you know. Or whatever your size is. That's a women's dress or something. But in Braja, they also have a couple of Vriksha trees. And the gopis say, "Oh, look at those nice pomegranates." And they just pick them and they squeeze and make the juice and then they offer it to Krishna after in Madhyan Lila, Radhakun. They don't say, "Hey, this is a couple of Vriksha tree. Hey, we can get a new sari from this tree or we can get a new necklace." Although all these things are, they never consider that because that's Aishwarya. That will interfere with the flow of Madhurya, of Braj. All that is there. The Kapil Vriksha, everything. The ground is also Chintamani, but in Braj the ground is just cow dung and mud. It's also Chintamani. It will fulfill all desires, but they don't want anything from the ground, but they want to see that dust sprinkled on Krishna's hair because he looks so beautiful and enhances his attraction. Makes him look more attractive. A little, it's called Goduli. The dust from the feet of the cows sprinkled in Krishna's turban and hair makes him enhances his beauty when he returns and go Charan Leela, Apurvan Leela. But in Vaikuntha, if there's a speck of dust, it's a revolution. I mean, they call on the police, you know. If they find a speck of dust somewhere, you get arrested. I mean, it's absolutely spick and span, like Switzerland or something. You drop a matchstick, you get a $100 fine. Or Singapore. I've never been. But it's like that, huh? Really super... So sterile. You felt like you're getting sterilized. They're just going there. It's what do they call that? It's a name for that. Not macabre, there's another name. Surreal.
Yes.
Surreal.